That's why I'm all in bed. Nobody gives me sympathy.
Hello, and welcome back to our podcast, but a fanfic of a fanfic. Itself is a synthesis of Fallout, the popular game about a post-apocalyptic wasteland, and My Little Pony, a popular show about pastel horses. Hi, I'm Fi, joined once again with my co-host Weird. Say hello, Weird.
This is indeed Sir Weirdington Esquire.
Got the top hat and everything.
I'm triple monocle this evening. It helps that within the K-fab I am a jukebox and thus don't have any limit on the number of things that can be justified as eyes, but nonetheless, I have one per each side, and then another one to the left side.
Many, many monocles.
It's a special day.
It is a special day. Every day's a special day. But yeah, hey, folks.
That's what Mr. Rogers taught us.
It is. Seriously, every day is, in fact, a special day. We're all alive.
And every person is a special person. You hear that, listener?
Yes, you are a special person. You are loved and valued, at least on this podcast. All right. We're back once again. We're episode, 21, chapter 29. We're doing another one of these folks. I guess Weird, we should just launch into it. Tell us what we learned last week.
Not a lot. All right, so the team is confronted by Pony Zordon.
Yes.
Informed that, that Zordon is the saddest cyborg of all time. Really just like a thin sheath of meat in a life support system in a tube underground somewhere, and that she needs the team to harness the secrets of the Maltese.exe so that she can reactivate the factory machinery of Project Mecha Pony.
Steel Pony, but yeah.
Mecha Horse. To build her a substantially more dignified body to install her corpse into. And then the rest of it was whinging about whether or not to erase Inventory Horse's memory because she's a mechanic who is traumatized by a robot in the microwave hallway. And so no longer a particularly effective mechanic. And they resolved to do this over Horsepool's protests because, they're all fully convinced that no amount of words will convince Pocket Horse that Horsepool is a profound danger to babies. Apparently something in Scotch Tape's personality means that only having personally seen it herself could ever convince her that Horsepool is a baby murderer. So Horsepool leaves the party for the time being. And then they set out to, I guess, go to the site of Project Mecha Horse. Is that what's happening?
Yeah, they're heading into one of the gang territories, and they're going to the home base of that, where they're heading now, because it's on the way to Iron Mare Station, which I think is the name of the Steel Ranger home base.
Okay, so it's on the way. Sure.
Yep. Side quest within a side quest.
Has Zordon promised any support in, trying to, levy any particular, strength to the negotiation from the Khalid? Then what?
Are they doing this?
Yeah.
Because they are. Because thou must. I think the
not even any
given
implication that,
No, not really.
Direct support? Just
unaffiliated war. They don't care.
This story's bad.
It is bad. It's specifically that nothing but, it's nothing that happens connects to anything else in the story at all. And it's just a bunch of, unrelated nonsense. Very specifically, the only excuse given is that they're Blackjack took sympathy on Zodiac for wanting to, like, get out of her tube before she dies. And that's why she's like, well, if I'm on the way anyways, I guess I'll try and help you. And this chapter will give a justification for, like, why that would, like, also help, but we'll have to get there. But yeah, so I guess we should just get back into it, because last week we didn't even get a perk. We, so little happened that not even experience, there wasn't enough experience gain to level up. And I realize why that happened. It's infuriating why it happened, but we'll have to get there. But just keep in mind that for those playing at home, typically speaking, characters level out. The max level is level 30. We're getting close to 30 level, like 30 chapters, but we're not quite there yet. So Somber fucked up and has to stagger them out a bit.
Also, Noodle Horse, like that jerk, the Noodle Horse didn't fucking murder anybody.
Yep.
So no XP, no execution points.
Yep. No lives taken, no experience gained. But yeah, so I guess I'm just gonna launch right into chapter 29. My word bad. Mortality, which is a cool name for a shit chapter. So, boy, there's a lot of nothing that happens in the early parts of this chapter. So we open up to the crew wandering around in the rain, basically bemoaning the loss of Horsepool, because they're like, well, we sure could use Horsepool in this instance, because she would have been a great guide for this area. And that's like a running thing of this, is it tries to make, like, Horsepool's departure matter more retroactively.
Amazing.
By implying that she contributed to the team somehow outside of being a murder death ball. But yeah, they wander around in the rain. They hide from, like, a moving building that just kind of, like, springs up. I think that's supposed to be a tank. It doesn't get explained very well. Aletta's chapter is intermittently 21 complaining about his leg. What?
Listener, you've just been spared from a Monty Python joke, but only because I couldn't remember the name of the...
The Crimson Claims Adjuster.
Yeah.
Or whatever. Yeah. Yeah. I don't remember the name of it, but yeah, the ship that's a building. Anywho, 21 complains about, having phantom pains, basically. Like, it's super inelegant the way that it's structured, but basically, like, 21 throughout the rest of this chapter complains about his leg still hurting, even though he's gotten patched up by, like, Wonder Science, and his leg should no longer be feeling pain, but he's basically, like, going through painkiller withdrawal, but it's psychosomatic, so he's feeling, like, phantom pain from it. But it, like, it's a really bad way of structuring it, because it just constantly, like, peppers this chapter through it, but, like, hey, somebody else in the story has a drug addiction. That's the long and skinny of it. God, so little happens this chapter. A lot of this chapter is them hiding in the out of the rain because they don't want to get fucked up by the rain, because it's, you know, it makes people sick, because they're vault ponies and they're really susceptible to disease. But so they wander into a sex shop for a while, and that gets to be a thing, to wait out the rain. A lot of it's just kind of like talking about bondage gear as it would pertain to ponies, which really isn't that exciting.
but very important. Very important that we spent a couple pages on.
Yes, it's really just the thing of, like, that every single person who's ever been part of this fandom has noticed. It's like, hey, in a universe where everyone's horses, wouldn't typical horse gear be kind of like sex like clothing? And everyone kind of nudges themselves like, and everyone's pointed this out, and it's never been funny. It's never been, like, provocative. Anywho, BJ gets bored of hanging around in the sex shop, so she decides to, like, use one of the various memory orbs that she has, and I do not know where she keeps getting them from. It really just has to be that they're just all piled on the ground. But this is a really important, really, really lacking in importance memory orb, because it's really just a memory orb of two characters fucking, which didn't need to be in the story, but cool. Again, it's only really frustrating for me because it further confirms the coupling in the story of Rarity and Vanity, which Vanity is one of the made-up bullshit characters in this. The reason why this is frustrating is, if you remember from like maybe like only like two chapters ago, one of my big problems with this is that in the original FOE, Rarity is gay, and so is Fluttershy, and so is Rainbow Dash. Apparently Sombra can't understand, like, not even subtext, like out-and-out text. Like, Rarity's dying moments are of confessing her love to Fluttershy and teleporting her out of the capital city so that she doesn't get killed by the mega spell. And, like, that apparently wasn't enough? For, like, nah, that's probably not really... They're not really in love with each other. Whatever. It was a spur-of-the-moment thing. So, he just completely washes all that away with this horrible headship, which, you know, thanks for that. Noted ally Somber.
In a voice that I hope was sufficiently dripping with irony, like I did point out that no, it's entirely consistent. It's what is it the gamer boys keep complaining about? Is that no, it's not that they're gay, it's forced gayness. No, it needs to be your organic gay.
Yes.
I only shop for like whole farm to market gayness. So I'm erasing these queers. Not because I'm bigoted in any way, not because it makes me uncomfortable, but because these queers are false is why it's insufficiently queer. And so I, as an ally, am preserving the art form of queer depiction from this inferior product.
Yeah, I fixed it. You don't have to thank me. Wait until we get to Golden Blood and Fluttershy. That's also will be really frustrating too. Anyways, Blackjack wakes up from sexy memory orb, and everyone's like it's all an awkward, basically you were watching porn in the living room kind of sitcom gag. It's not important, but it's what happens. The only thing that's important from it is that Glory is all weird and flirty about it, because Glory is establishing that she in fact is the top in the relationship. Hard and firm. Then they wander out to, and when the rain lets up a little bit, into like a major war zone that happened, and it's not, again, doesn't really seem to contribute to anything. It just like a bunch of bodies are here, and like we found some Steel Ranger armor, and like that's really all that's important from here. Oh boy, we get into some frustrating stuff though. Oh man, the rain gets heavy again, so they decide to head into it's described as a sporting goods store, but I don't think that's what it is because of what's about to transpire here, named Silver Sporting Goods Store, which is all hell, it has a Western theme in it, and the only real important thing in here is we get a set of a terminal entry where a guy is sending emails to his brother who was in the military and went missing. And the only reason why it's fun to talk about this is because the whole time he's talking about board games, specifically tabletop games, and very specifically, he is describing a bunch of events that happened, and they're confused initially because they don't know what a tabletop is, and they're like, okay, like whatever, this is. It's supposed to be that, like, the twist is that, like, they're talking about, like, a wasteland, and then they don't understand that it's a game, I guess, and that's the sort of joke of it. But the broader context for it, which was hilarious to me, after my good pal Weird here shared with me some of the details of the plot line of the Deadlands tabletop game, and when I realized that that's what this was. So they find like the board game that they're playing, and it's called like Wasteland, and it's basically like an Eratz version of the of Deadlands, and I cannot go into too much detail about why this is infuriating without spoiling a bunch of shit later on.
Well, okay. Well, then just foreshadow it. Like tell us a few like key details that may become relevant in the future. Tease for us the pain.
So some of the terminals mentioned about like one of the like a bunch of characters and stuff, and the only real important one is that there is the guy references his brother's character named Smiling Jack, who's like this cool cowboy. God, I can't, like, it's such a dumb plot point that I just want to say it,
but like it's also a plot point, so I can't just like it's ridiculous to talk about the fact that like there is a fake tabletop game. It's based off a real tabletop game that the real version of it is kind of the like it like its themes are kind rub off entirely onto this piece of work.
It's a bizarre. Well, just relay the events as they happen in this chapter, and then we can be sad later.
Yeah.
I'm very worried. I'm extremely worried because so to break up this, I don't know what it's like for the listener, but like the text of the chapter has been so boring that I've had listless brain and have very difficult. I don't even know who the party is talking to. Some fucking nerd living in a post-apocalyptic. Like, how many people are here that they're like were at all interested in like a pre-war artifact of a tabletop RPG source book?
So that's where it's like very confusing, and I've been kind of like stuttering over. Is that the twist? Is that these are like. Like initially, they when they read them, they're like, okay, these are people like from the modern time using these terminals, and then it kind of the sort of reveal of it being immediately that it's no, these are terminals from the past, but because it's talking about a version like in a post-apocalyptic tabletop game, it confuses them initially. That's supposed to be the sort of the point of this. So they're reading terminals of a dude talking to his brother, and it's only relevant because his brother is one of the fucking Macintosh Marauders, and that's only important because it relates to another stupid thing. And like, it's just
okay.
Like
so they're reading through like Discord chat logs.
Yes, basically.
Or like a Twitter thread that's like just up on like still up on a term. Like, wait a minute. It's saved in the hard drive of the system, or like, is there a server still up somewhere? Like, this is so okay. All right. Okay. So as a sort of brain mouthwash and foreshadowing for terror to come. So the main problem with the RPG Deadlands, Deadlands for if you're not familiar, is an analog tabletop RPG about what if the South won the Civil War because ghosts. Because the four horsemen have risen, and now the damned of hell have risen up, and they
also,
gain power through fear, and so they use fear as a power source to generate cryptids.
Isn't it also the Native Americans' fault as well in it as well that like
effectively like the storyline is that. It doesn't directly reference the ghost dance. In fact, I'm not even sure the authors of the Deadlands are even aware of what the ghost dance is. But the ghost dance was something that actually happened in history, wherein I can't remember his name, but some Native American leader, realizing that the total extinction of the First Nations people was at hand, and gathered up a cult to perform a massive ritual called the ghost dance, which he promised would eradicate white people would push white people back out into the sea.
And unfortunately it didn't work because, you know,
it didn't work in reality, but in Deadlands it did. And what it did was summon the four horsemen of the apocalypse to destroy basically everyone. And so, yeah, Native Americans perform a ritual that breaks the seal and breaks the divide between the mortal world and hell, basically. And so demons are taking the form of cryptids, of sort of legends of what people assume might be in the Wild West, to terrify people and use that energy to create more cryptids is the basic premise of Deadlands, which, you know, it's fine. It's Evil Dead in the Wild West is sort of the core premise. But the main problem what I think any reasonable person would have with the setting is that it's constantly apologetic to the Confederate South. Like in its meta lore, eventually the South abolishes slavery on its own, implying that indeed the Civil War was canonically within Deadlands a war of Northern aggression. It was totally unnecessary for the cause of abolition. And it keeps doing this. There's a repeated trend of, in case you didn't know, listener, fight me if you're stupid enough to believe otherwise. But the Confederates were evil. They were all hideous monsters, basically every last one of them. But Deadlands thinks that it needs to justify why a Confederate might be a villain. So, for example, Jefferson Davis is killed and replaced by a doppelganger. Because, of course, Jefferson Davis, on his own, historically, would be just too decent a person to ever be remotely in cahoots with demonic forces.
Isn't it invariably they're just like all like replaced by demons and ghosts?
Well, like Nathan Bedford Forrest, founder of the Ku Klux Klan, and the man who was in charge of and responsible for the Fort Pillow Massacre, wherein black soldiers were lynched, scalped, and castrated as they were killed basically to the man. Yeah, no, he gets an evil sword, like he's possessed by an evil sword. Because that's necessary to justify why he would be a bastard. No way a man like that could be a villain just on his own.
Just because, yeah.
So anyway, like that's the chief problem with Deadlands, and if what's going to happen in the story in any way reflects that problem.
So to spoil the milk early, because I've already explained a lot of this already as is, everything you've just described applies to this setting. Every single detail of Deadlands is kind of mushed and replicated in Project Horizons in terms of tone. So won't that be a hoot going forwards? I've hyped up the fact that like Deadlands is like the kind of cipher of this whole thing, and it's not wrong. Like basically, like everything I've ever heard of from Weird about Deadlands is like, oh, that's where this plot point came from in PH. Oh, that's why the PH's tone is like this. Like, PH is like one third Deus Ex, one third Deadlands, one third like
Metal Gear.
Yeah, Metal Gear, basically, in terms of its like storytelling,
except with inverted politics.
Well, I was gonna say like, but also like entirely inarticulate and like wrong about all of the source material, except for maybe Deadlands. Like, it takes all the Metal Gear like aesthetics, but like none of its politics are retained, and it takes all of its like. It takes all of Deus Ex's like cool technology, but like none of the like none of the controversy that's built within the Deus Ex universe about the notion of like automation utterly taking over every aspect of our lives to the point even our own bodies are under the control of a government. But you know, fuck it, whatever. Robots are cool. You know, cool robot meme.
Wow, cool future.
The worst kind of cyberpunk writers are the people who just go cool robot, and that's what we got right here. But anyways, back to the actual story. So it turns out this whole place is a trap because it's super loaded with enervation, and it got super bad when they got into the building, and they don't know why. And it's completely conked Lacuna out, and they can't get they have to like they can't get out of the building fast enough. It'll kill them all. So they have to find the source of what's causing it. Like what changed that made it so intense now? So there's a big kind of tense scene of them trying to like. Essentially melting and trying to like get to whatever is causing the intense E field, and BJ finds a box that's in the room that's like in a back room. As like a like basically it's a breaker, and like a weird glowing metal ring has been like had wires plugged into it, so that like when they turned the power back on in the building, it turned this thing on and it started exuding heavy enervation fields from it. So BJ just blows the shit out of it, and it like the ring isn't destroyed, but it severs the connection to the electricity, and like it not nearly as bad because of that, which allows them to get out. It's just to show off like this is what's causing enervation. Like they finally found what it might actually be causing it, and it's this weird metal. But yeah, now we get into like dumber shit. Cool. They run into some strangers that are like in a settlement called that they. Flips on the radar to say Fallen Arch, and BJ's like, okay, what's going on here? We need to like, I don't want to, like, shoot at them because that that happened last time, so I'm going to go, like, talk to them and see what happens. And we get into an incredibly forced scene that I fucking hate, like I always do, where, so, to set the scene, Blackjack goes up to the these ponies, and they're very suspicious and aggro about BJ, and BJ, like, notice, like, feels something's off about the whole place. They immediately find out that, like, this town has been, like, hooking explosive collars to their women folk and been selling them off to slavers and raiders. And, you know, BJ is presumably quite pissed about this, but the head guy of it basically says, like, if you touch us, I'll just blast them, and that won't, like, and it won't, like, I'll just kill, like, I would rather, like, kill them than, like, then have to deal with you. And they make some, there's some bad arguments made that, like, they have to do this because they're out of money and they're out of salvageable material and they're slowly dying, so this is the only way to survive. The whole scene comes apart, it, like, entirely when, like, BJ kills the son of the head slaver, and, like, that slaver, in a moment of desperation, collars himself and hooks, like, a dead man switch up to it that, like, if his head blows, then all of the other collars are going to explode. It's an incredibly forced, dumb scene that is not tense at all or interesting. And it just falls apart because Blackjack, like, begs him to survive, and he's just like, nah, I die on my own terms, and just kills himself, and it kills all the women there. And, like, it's just a big, stupid scene that's just designed to make you feel bad. It's the fucking...
More like, feel annoyed because, like, we have, like, don't...
We have a bomb expert?
Specifically, yeah. Like, if ever there was a time for, like, P-21 to, like, be relevant to the story, it, like he has every single skill set necessary to literally defuse the situation. Like,
yes.
Oh, I see you've got a lock here set to, like, a bomb trigger. Yeah. Isn't that too bad for you?
So later in this chapter, we find out that that's because he noticed it, but then froze at the last minute, and that's what, like, got them all killed.
Our fucking K-Fab has it that I'm a jukebox, so I can't make a masturbatory motion. But listener, just feel it in my heart. I'm making a spirit jerk off motion. Like really hard. Like great. So that's the most aggravating thing I can think. Like,
so, and I'll also always make the point too.
You set up a situation specifically, like, that only one character can solve, and that character never actually gets to do anything.
Yep.
But for whinging, for fucking, for some more brood points, so that, like, they can be sad and, like, self-hating about it a while, that you specifically set it up so that they don't. Great. Fuck the story. Fuck it.
Infinite ball drops. It's bad. It is bad. It's infinite ball drops.
Man. Ugh, my guts feel bad.
I also want to say...
All the diodes on my left side.
Are all broken. Yeah, we need to repair weird. But I also always want to point out this thing, too, because it happens again in this scene of, like, Blackjack immediately forgives 21, and 21 really doesn't feel that broken up about it, I guess. Because the story does this continuously, where, like, Blackjack does bad thing, and then, like, there's a half-hearted attempt to try and forgive her for it, and, like, then the story, she spends the whole story, like, groveling at the feet of redemption and, like, feeling sorry for herself and, like, never getting, like, help for it. But then, like, 21 does anything wrong, like, the smallest boo-boo, he's immediately kissed and made better, and he doesn't even really seem to feel that bad about it in the first place. Like, it's such half-hearted attempts to try and give him character by making him also suffer the same kind of, like, martyr complex that 20, like, that BJ is suffering from. Like, it's just so bad because, like, Somber can't help but, like, keep pushing 21 all the way to space. Like, he gets all the push in the world for a character that really just isn't that interesting. And, like, yeah, his skill set just, like, he doesn't do anything. He has yet to do a single thing in the story that matters. He helped kill Deus. That's it.
Like, it's not even worth... I'll say it, in spite of it not actually being worth saying, that, like... So Somber has shown a lot of signs of being a reactionary, which is, like, kind of especially funny in this specific context, because, like... So here's a bit of ancient wisdom. A tribe is its women. A given tribe can lose 90% of its men and bounce back. It'll be fine. But if a tribe loses 90% of its women, it is extinct.
Yes.
So this town, like, was not long for the world, period. Like, no. If they're, like, selling off all of their women, if they're, like, disposing of their women, then, like, they don't have a future.
Yes.
So, like, there's also that.
Yeah.
This practice could not have been going on long.
No, it couldn't. But, you know, here we are. Bad scene, bad execution, bad writing.
Bad premise, bad...
Yeah, just all bad.
Bad.
Zero thumbs out of stars. We get a they go by a billboard as they're walking around that says Hoofington Rises, because we need to establish that, like, motif. And they argue
sure,
whether or not it's ominous. Sorry?
Yeah, sure, Zig Heil. All right.
Yeah. Well, they're like, well, that's ominous, and, like, yeah, it's kind of ominous, but whatever. Okay, now to actually get into, like, the actual chapter. The thing that they're actually doing for this. They get blasted at by some Steel Rangers for a little while. They knock one over with relative ease, which is stupid.
I'm just imagining cow tipping kind of smith.
Yeah.
Like, it's the Ed 209, but a horse.
Yeah, I wish. Like, I wish that's what it was. Because they're always, like, in giant stupid armor. But, like, yeah. They managed to knock one over, and they basically, like, hey, we don't want to fight you. And it turns out there are a couple of greenhorns, and they're like, well, we're supposed to shoot Alicorns on sight, because, like, Steel Rangers and Alicorns have a long-standing beef. They're like, whatever, Lacuna's our friend, it doesn't matter. And they seem to take
that. Oh, that's even more brilliant. Is this a thing known to the setting? Were they aware of this, like, bias of this beef ahead of time? Okay, so it's entirely new information to everybody in the party that, like, they learn it in character, in setting, as of this conversation.
So it's also important to note that if you were reading the original story, you would already know this by this point. So that's why this doesn't matter. It's just to explain the thing to the characters. But regardless, there seems...
Even Lacuna didn't know that the Steel Rangers have a shoot-on-site policy?
She doesn't say anything about it.
Bitch.
Yeah. Bad writing moment. But yeah, they're okay, folks. It turns out they've been fighting with the gangs around the area, and one of their own got kidnapped, and that's why they've been, like, kind of wandering in the area trying to find him.
In my head, this conversation is being had while the two, like, Steel Rangers are turtling, like, are whipped over turtling, like, their machine clad limbs, like, whirring slightly as they bat at the air helplessly, like.
Yes, that's the new canon. But they're basically like, well, because they're, like, trying to figure out who they can even talk to in the chain of command to, like, get this whole war settled. And they're like, well, you could ask Crunchy Carrots, who's the head of it, or we get some other name drops, which is Star Paladin Steel Ring, which we'll be seeing a lot of later, and another character named Paladin Bombs, which doesn't sound right when I say it aloud.
Paladin Bombs. I'm here for you for now.
They describe him as a kind of, like, a weirdo nutcase. It's because he's based off an anime character, so we'll get to him when we get to him.
Oh, no. That's overly negative. Let's go back to the old catchphrase. Oh, boy!
Yes, that's a good catchphrase. But, yeah, we get the reiterations of all the gangs, in case you forgot from Chapter 1. There's the Flash Phillies, which is an all-girl gang. There's the Half Hearts, which are a bunch of moody assholes. There's the Highlanders, which are Scottish.
And more!
Yep.
More factions!
And there's the Burner Boys, which are all about fire. I'm going to talk about how I got really, really mad this chapter in a little bit about the Flash Phillies because of something that gets backfilled later on. So they're worried about their buddy.
Their gimmick is Worms!
Yes, their gimmick is Worms and rape.
Like, girl is a personality trait, and also... Because obviously that's not enough. Good on Sombra for noticing that's really not enough to like build a theme around. What else can we add? Ah, rape.
So they're worried about
their sort of our go-to ingredient for Sombra.
Yes, it is. First of all, they're worried about their buddy because they're like, okay, he's gonna get the Flash Phil is keep like basically brood males, and they're worried about him. So they're sure he's alive, but he's probably not alive for very long. Christ. I'm gonna talk about this as we get into the chapter, but we'll get into it. But I just want to point out that Sombra has done this twice now with two wildly different sets of characters that are purely matriarchal, also have the bad problem of raping men, which is the most like red pill bullshit I've heard. Like in about your fantasy world that like, oh, they're matriarchal societies. All of them must use men to rape because that's what men do. Like, so if you just switch the polarities, like, and obviously that's the way it would work. It's like, that's awful and asinine and stupid and just childish and bad. And more expletives.
Yeah.
But, I'm going to cap the Flash Phillies with a bomb drop that makes them infuriating later on. But, anyways, we get explanations that the Steel Rangers also suck because while they are, they have every capacity to, like, help the Wastelands, they don't because their edicts are all about, like, protecting the technology in past and not, like, helping the people in the modern age, so they just hoard technology for the sake of hoarding it. Because they believe they're the inheritors of the original ministries, and that gives them the right to do so. It's complicated. It's a thing from FOE. Just read that.
Oh, it's a thing from the original Fallout.
Yes. But I mean, and as a holdover, it's also an FOE, but like, whatever. BJ has a moment of like trying to get all her crew to like to go home because they're deep in enemy territory now, and she's because of the Fallen Arches thing. She's super worried about like her whole crew getting murdered. Which
I like to fucking worry about that. Well, that she's concerned for before the microwave hallway. Like, when will she at least get to like have the like good money after bad? Like the sunk cost fallacy surely has to take place at some point. Like
so. Their response is really frustrating.
Nowhere! Again, like, you're past the point of no return. Like, there's nowhere to go now.
They're too in this, but she says they should all go to chapel and stuff because she doesn't want anything bad to happen.
How?
Yeah, well, it's
in a microwave hallway?
Well, I guess they'll just swim. I don't know. They'll fast travel back. But it's also frustrating, too, because all their responses basically can be summarized on, like, Blackjack, you're our emotional center. We're all utterly codependent on you. We can't go anywhere else.
You like, are the protagonist.
Yes.
If we leave your line of sight, we no longer are. This story is told in the first person. If you are no longer describing us, we no longer are. You condemn us to oblivion.
Oh man, where's that story? But they, but of course they all. It's all meant to be like a triumphant, we're all friends moment. But like, it really just comes
really
across
grotesque.
As,
like we really,
we don't have any other options really. Like Glory's basically like, I can't go back to Thunderhead. I can't go back to Chapel. My only life is with you because she's deep in the codependency stew at this point. And Scott just mutters something along the lines of like, well, stable ponies got to stick together, which is like. At least precocious and childlike, which I can appreciate, but like...
Also, I can't get out of your inventory. I'm a quest significant item, which means that I can't be, like, sold or used. Like a
dumb plotline. But yeah, it's just further reiteration of points that just suck. Okay, time to actually get into the dungeon for this week. So... they head to Flash Philly's home turf, which is called Flash Industries, which is like an old industry building built for like experimental technology, basically.
That's oh, thank God! I thought you were gonna say makeup.
Yeah, that would be actually no.
Cosmetics,
like okay, so like, admittedly, yeah, the girl thing would have been problematic, but like I kind of I guess like with the right writer, that could almost be fun. of like
in for a penny, like I don't know, like a
yeah. If they're already super flashy, like whatever, we're in a it's a fashion store, so like that's where like where all our stupid clothes come from. Like yeah. But yeah, anyways, they're helping the Rangers now, I guess. Don't know when that happened. But they're gonna go save this guy, turn on the thing, complete the side quest. A lot of this is them sneaking through the building. They get the really dumb plan of sneaking through the building. They beat up a guard and then get 21 to disguise themselves as one of the guards so that he can steal building keys, basically, off of their boss, a character named Diamond. It's a really dumb plan that fails basically immediately. But we do overhear a bunch of like relevant plot details for later storylines. Turns out the Flash Phillies are in cahoots with the Enclave, and specifically Operative Lighthooves, who just shows up back again. And they have some sort of deal going on that, like, he'll provide something to them for, like, targeting talismans. And I guess I never explained talismans up to this point. But talismans are just, like, magic technology in its most, like, specific form. It, like, a talisman does a specific thing, and that's what it's built out of. Like a water talisman just purifies water, as opposed to, like, complex spell matrices like the Pip Buck. But Diamond immediately catches 21, who's like threatening to like throw him to the rape pile, and we'll deal with him later. But he manages to sneak back out of that situation and explains that this was all according to plan, which is an incredibly stupid plan to hinge yourself on. That getting caught wouldn't immediately get you killed.
It worked for the Joker and that one guy from the James Bond movie and that other guy who was ripping off the Joker and that other guy. It worked for all of them.
But yeah, they managed to get into the main office, which admittedly is a kind of cool, like, jarring moment where they, like, go from, like, the wasteland and they open up a pair of doors and they go into, like, what looks like a pristine, clean room with, like, a little secretary sitting there. He's like, hi, how can I help you? And then we find out that, like, the secretary is... I initially thought she was a robot, but, like, what Flash Industries actually built was they specialized in experimental hard light hologram technology. So the secretary is a little, like, hologram that can, like... but, like, feels solid. And that's what's going on with the room as well, is the whole room is, like... projected over a like clean pristine room.
Wait, are the rape glamazons gym? Is that what this is leading up to?
Are they gym and
holograms?
Are they outrageous? Are they truly, truly, truly outrageous?
I fear the answer.
Yes.
I mean, okay.
I think it's more pulling from that. They're not literally holograms, but they badger the secretary for a while about what's going on. They get a bunch of plot details that don't matter, which is just about like the technology this place built. BJ slips that they're looking for Project Steel Pony, which triggers like a security thing. The room gets gassed. They break the gas in the room. They manage to escape from it. They get into Diamond's bedroom, I think is what it is. And they find Ranger Turnip, who has been, like, strapped to a bed, and apparently, like, he didn't really understand the arrangement is that he was, like, he was enjoying being used as a fuck toy, basically, so he didn't really realize that he was needed to be saved.
Right fucking back to, like, Boy and His Dog, and they're, like,
yep.
Great, this is fucking... This is just a recurring, like, sexual fantasy for Somber. I can only guess. Presume.
Yeah, I don't want to presume anything, but it seems really suspicious that...
Oh no, I've been kidnapped into sex slavery!
By all these hot Amazons.
Oh no! So he's hard to rescue because he doesn't understand that he's a captive.
Yes, sure. But they managed to save him anyways. But this is when we bust into boss battle time. So they bump back into, like, on their way back into the office, like secretary office. Like, Diamond comes in at the same time from the other side, and she's like, you know, I'm sick of you fucks, I'm gonna kill you. And she, like, activates a giant laser Gatling gun that she has, and, like, has this cool impenetrable shield because that was like part of the hard light technology that they were building was basically like personal defense shields as well. So they have a proper boss battle, which would be awesome, except for Somber doesn't know how to write stories. So they fight her for a while. And they're like, okay, we don't know what to do. And like their suggestion is like, okay, maybe this EMP grenade will work. But instead, a bunch of fucking lasers just shoot through the building. Like a bunch of orbital defense lasers that are shooting from approximately the south. Just blast through the building and annihilate Diamond in one hit. Absolute kill steal mode. And then from the vapor appears fucking Golden Blood. And he's like, hi, I've been meaning to talk to you for a while, Blackjack. Basically, it's the I want to join, get you to join the Maltese.exe initiative. But BJ isn't buying this sudden serendipitous moment.
No. No.
What?
Okay, so what happens next?
Golden Blood is then switches to this like horrible guttural like mechanical voice, and like a bunch of like force fields like start gripping around Blackjack and trying to pull her leg off to try and get the like thing, and it like screams over and over again that it wants the file. And there's kind of like a cool moment where Glory does something for once, where she's like darting in between lasers and stuff like that to try and get the grenade that like got cast aside during the fight, as the whole building's being ripped apart by death lasers, and like just like manages in time to like chuck it at Golden Blood and like disable the like whatever is happening to Blackjack, and everyone gets saved, and they have this like moment of like staring at each other from the other side, raptured in the love of being saved by one another. And then like the building falls apart and the building collapses underneath Glory, and Blackjack tries to save her by like gripping onto her with her like noodle arms, and then like just slips out of her grip and falls into the darkness. And that's how we end our chapter, with Glory dying. But like, as I've said before, it's a meme and Glory's not really dead.
Yeah. I mean, she never is. Like, you're just going to re-manifest in an oven somewhere, or cupboards, or an event will fall. It's fine. consequences aren't a thing. The fall is fundamentally indestructible. What was the Golden Blood a hologram projected from the inside of the building? What was...
Yes.
Is there... Okay. Was the destruction of the wall a holographic illusion? Like, was it the AI of the building turned against this filly? Was she ever even there at all? Could they not hurt her because she was, in fact, purely illusion? What happens? What happens? I don't know. I don't understand what happened in this chapter. I have no idea what's going on.
So Diamond was real, but she got murdered by lasers. The lasers came from outside of the building. Golden Blood was being projected by the holographic emitters in the room, though. And then when they canceled that turned off the weird hologram field that like was being used to crush Blackjack. I think that covers everything that like happened in that fight. Because really, she just like shows up as a boss battle and is like, "Ha ha, I'm gonna fight you." And then like for like they fight for 2 seconds and then she just like. Death lasered, like a railgun shot from across the map. She just ceases to exist.
Is there any will we ever find out where the laser came from? Like what?
Yes, we will.
Why wouldn't, if they had complete control of, if whoever was able to like hack into this building and get complete control of the hologrid, why wouldn't they just turn the shield off? That seems more energy efficient, right? Just.
Well, the shield that Diamond had was like a personal shield. It was like physically on her.
Okay.
She had like a box. I think it was like a necklace or something like that that like projected the field.
This story is real bad. Is there something else we could be reading?
First of all, just before we do that though, I just wanted to like get back to that bomb that I was going to drop, that I was going to say why the Flash Fillies are infuriating. So we learn very late into the story that all of the gangs have a different gimmick. The Half Hoot Hearts are all about like they lost someone they love, so they join this gang of like forlorn losers. The Burner Boys were all people that were like burned horribly, and so they used fire. The Highlanders are all a Scottish clan, and the Flash Fillies are all rape survivors. So Somber thinks that rape survivors would then go on to rape other people in revenge. I think he forgot about this plot point in when he originally introduced the Flash Phillies, because they were just bad guys at the time.
So that's stomach churning. That's like, there could always be something to be said for like repeated cycles of abuse, but generally, like, most people who are victims of sexual assault, like, just can't for a very long time without a lot of like care and healing, can't do sexual things. They just can't have that in their lives. And so, like, a huge number of these people would, like, be able to externalize that violence onto a lighter dumb thing. Like, the mention of, like, mentioning the gangs again, reminding me that, like, since the gangs are presumably all under the, like, final authority of the Reapers, this means that they're, all of these factions named are just sort of brigades, are units of the Reaper war effort, which really highlights how pointless the whole mission is, because, like, okay, our gang gets into the core of Reaper territory, Steel Ranger territory, speaks with their high command, and the high command agrees, yes, and indeed we believe in peace between our factions. So what? Yeah. they're subject to an invasion. Like,
yeah.
Cool. in terms of like modern politics, this would be like somebody going to on a mission to Iran to like sue for peace between Iran and the United States. The U.S. starts bombing, then like it really doesn't matter what the Iranians think about the prospect of peace.
A misunderstanding of believing that wars are always two-sided affairs.
Yeah, no. If any one side of a war decides to pick up their ball and go, then the war is over. That's somber at time of writing. This is a goddamn child, a bad child that like twists off like the heads of small animals.
I'm actually like almost curious enough to want to read the sequel to see like, has Somber improved as a person, or is they just stagnate into further like grotesquery? That seems like a fascinating like read for me. But before that, recommendation time. Sadly, we're without mail again for this week. We got to get on that, folks. Especially we're gonna plug a slightly different slightly after this. But I'm quickly running out of like stories that are good to recommend without asterisks. And the asterisk of this one this week is that, like, I'm going to recommend two of them because both of them are unfinished. Oh, I guess I can only recommend one of them. I'll put the other one in show notes because I can't remember the name of it, but I'll describe it. But both of them are unfinished works for different reasons. But they're still interesting ideas, even if they never, like, even if nothing is ever finished of them. They're effectively finished because of their lack of finishedness, whatever. One of them is called Fall Equestria Misfits, which is a after the events of Fall Equestria story, which are rarer than you'd imagine. Most people tend to put their like stories before the events of FOE or during the events of FOE, and there's only a handful of them that are actually take place after the fact. Misfits is an interesting story because it's about an Alicorn character who wakes up and like has their old memories of their old body and like has to cope with the like weird baggage of now being like what is considered like the world, like the wasteland's greatest monsters, and has to like deal with a lot of the fallout of like something like FOE, where like FOE kind of like, because of just narrative shortness or whatever you want to call it, implies that the world gets a lot better, but like there's a lot of like growth period that it would take to get to that better future for a lot of people, and Misfits kind of focuses on that kind of stuff, and that's really neat. And the other one that I'm going to focus on for this week that I can't remember the name of, but it's an interesting idea of, regardless, which is a wasteland that's in the ocean, primarily. Like, it's basically, like, it's Waterworld, and the main character is a fish pony. And
okay.
It's
innovative.
Well, it's interesting because it's, like, it's a bunch of, like, islands and stuff, and it's a lot of, like, it's just a very different feel. Like, I'm a big fan of, like, like when I talked about Dead End last 2 weeks, like, I'm a big fan of, like, not just having a desert, like, not just having, like, barren wasteland in your apocalypse. Like, having different locations is always really interesting to me, because they have different feels and different applications to the kind of way you could tell a story in them. So, like, having one in the ocean is really neat, and same with having it in a woodland area or the snow. I'm probably going to be talking about, like, Stalingrad at some point, if I ever read that one. Like, ever not read that one, go through that one. And I'm also, I've been reading a bunch of newer stuff, and eventually I'll be done those, and I'll be able to actually make recommendations based off of them, but I'm seeing some good stuff out there, so, like, look forward to that.
Yeah, gotta say, it does...
Yes.
Oh, I was just hoping that I'd be able to get a word in edgewise in between the person drilling behind me. The bunker does need sufficient repairs. Anyway, the idea of a post-apocalypse is interesting. Even if it's a fanfic of a fanfic of a fanfic involving horses, like, no one ever talks about the recovery period. So that's kind of intriguing. Like, the most you ever see of, like, somebody talking about a recovery period in the wake of an apocalypse is the dystopic aftermath. Like, civilization and, like, survivability has been restored, but in the form of a dystopia.
Mm-hmm.
So that sounds kind of interesting.
Yeah, I like the growing pains kind of element of it. But yeah, that's my recommendations for the week is Misfits and to be announced in the show notes.
Okay, so call to action time. Meteor X has gotten significantly closer. So much so that we're able to define some details about its trajectory. And good news, you listener, are almost certainly completely safe. I, however, will die.
Yeah, turns out the meteor was a lot smaller, but, like, laser targeted at weird.
So by about the end of October, Meteor X, which is a metaphor for larger things outside of our KFAB universe, will kill me, will destroy me. So we're setting up a Patreon, and now your feedback is more important than ever. But instead of just we need your likes, we need your comments to boost the profile of the podcast. But more importantly than anything, your goal is not to, like, feed our ego or like, you know, reassure us that we're doing a good or bad job. We need you to get the word out about the podcast. Try to get people in. We're hoping to set up a Patreon very soon, which means special bonus episodes.
Yeah.
Maybe talking about things on the recommended list. Doing selected readings of things. You can hear. Oh my man, it's really great timing. On the intensity of the renovations going on.
Just yell louder, weird. Yell louder.
I really, really can't scold Jorge. He's done terrible things. To boxes stronger than I.
But yeah, we're going to be setting up a Patreon, folks. So, like, we need more than ever your like visibility so that we can get money to keep weird alive. Like, because that's the big thing. We need to keep weird alive. But yeah, we'll be doing
yeah,
bonus
so,
stuff.
So help, if I am at all entertaining to you, you can go on Thou Art Fi on Twitter. Go to Weirdington ESQ at Gmail. Comment on iTunes, comment on Podbay, try and spread the word, reblog Thou Art Five, Fi's tweet, advertising the latest Podbay upload, offer whatever support you can, and help divert Meteor X from crushing specifically me. in its fiery horror. Beyond that, rapist Amazons, inexplicable lasers, forgotten 90s tabletop RPGs being central to the theming and plot of the story with all of its Confederate apologia. Fight, all in all, I've got to say, I think this might have all been a terrible mistake.